Welcome to Sports Lounge Live, a weekly talk show covering baseball, basketball, football, NASCAR, plus the latest sports news, both pro and college. Hear past talk shows on your phone by calling the Conversation Station or as a podcast on your iPhone, Victor Stream, or computer. Visit legendoldies.com for links to automatically connect via your computer or iPhone. Call the sports aficionados at area code 646-876-9923 and enter the PIN 287-723-4600, followed by the pound key twice. And now, your hosts, Chris Devon, Perry Lester, Sean Platts, and Bill Sparks.
Hello from a very rainy southwest Florida, but at least it's rainy, it's not snowing. Good evening, Chris, how are you?
Hey, everything's going well here. We're going to have a good show. This is number 26. We've finished half a year now. And this is January 27th. I always like to put the date on there because people pick up podcasts and you don't always know which day we're talking, and it puts things into a little bit of a context. So I try to give them a number and a date right off the bat. And we're going to cover our usual things. The NFL will be a lot shorter tonight, although we will have a few things to say about that. We'll start that off. Then we're going to go to basketball, both pro and college. Then we'll do the NHL standings and report, just give you the results of the All-Star games, I should say, because they had the divisional games. We'll explain that. Then we're going to do baseball because we have four really good Hall of Famers going into Cooperstown this summer, and probably the best class as a group I can remember in a very long time. And then we'll just kick it around and see what people want to talk about. But before we do that, we're going to get Sean to kick out he's going to outkick the coverage, as somebody might say, and tell us all the numbers that he has in mind here.
All right. Well, first of all, we want to remind you that normally we are on Sundays, as we are tonight live, but next week, because it is the Super Bowl, and we would love to watch the Super Bowl, just like you were watching the Super Bowl. So next week, we'll be on Saturday, Groundhog Day, February 2nd, the same time that we're here now, but it'll be Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and then you will be able to download the podcast, just as you always do, if you don't catch it. But we'll be here. We may even have a return of Ringside Robert, because right now he had to go back to his real podcast, his boxing Ringside Reporter, which you can download at ringsidereporter.com, or you can listen at the 773-572-7781. That's 773-572-7781. Also, as the Super Bowl comes, you'll hear all the different XM Sirius stuff with Perry at 641-715-3800 and enter 36867 pound. You'll hear all that good XM stuff over there. And if you want to leave us a message at any time, do not mark the message private, but call 773-572-7715. And hey, if you leave us a message throughout the week, we do address it the next week. We have addressed messages before when we've got them, and we will do that again anytime we have it. So anyway, let's get to the NFL.
I guess the biggest thing with the NFL, obviously we know the Pro Bowl was played today. I personally did not watch one moment of it, but the AFC.
I didn't either.
The AFC did win it 26-7. Let's hope that is not a thing to with the Super Bowl coming up that they do that.
I wouldn't say that.
But the AFC did win 26-7. Apparently, there is some talk that Alex Smith may not be ready for next season for the Redskins. So,
I heard that on NFL Network today. I had a good time. I was watching Super Bowls. They start. Actually, it gets a half hour longer every year. They show the highlights of all the Super Bowls. And the neat thing about it, as time goes on, the radio crews start to get more involved. The early ones, it's pretty much no play-by-play, and John Facenda just tells you what's going on and all that. But as time goes on, more and more of the radio play-by-play get involved. I got a chance to see about three of the Patriots' wins. I saw the one against the Rams. I guess I saw four. I saw the one against the Rams. I saw the one against Carolina, the one against the Eagles, and I missed the one against Seattle, but I saw the one that come from behind against Atlanta, and that was fun. And everybody should try to remember that. They used to be on ESPN, but now they've moved them over to NFL Network, and which makes sense. It's their property, so why not?
Yeah.
And so Now, next year, it'll be half an hour longer because Super Bowl 53 will be the last one they show, and they'll start at 1. And I'm waiting for it to be, you know, till we have enough Super Bowls that they could just start right after the Super Bowl and run until the next Super Bowl. You know, eventually that will happen, I guess.
And it would not surprise me if sometimes during the week, this week, that you don't see some stuff like on ESPN Classic or something like that.
Yeah, they might throw them in, or even the NFL Network, they may throw in when nothing's happening. They've got a thing tomorrow night, and I don't know whether it's worth watching or not, but they were promoting it. And Super Bowl opening night, they call it, on Monday from 7 to 10 Eastern. Has anybody ever seen it? Does anybody know what the heck it is?
I don't.
I don't know what that is at all, but I know Media Row is starting to pick up tomorrow. All the shows are going to be, you know, all the radio and TV shows will be there starting tomorrow. Then, you know, but I don't know what the opening night is. Media Day, I believe, is what, Tuesday?
Tuesday, usually, yeah.
Yeah, and that's when you get all the weird questions from the TMZs and the Azteca and all those. You get all those weird, like, people that don't know sports, but they're going to be asking all kinds of ridiculous questions.
That's right.
And we go, oh, man. But, you know, I will say, though, last week we were in the middle of the second game. We had a historical event, the first time ever that both championship games went to overtime.
Yes.
And of course,
that was a heck of a game.
There was controversy in the first game.
Yep, there was in the first game, and there's been, and I'm sure the Saints have gotten their apology. The NFL has been apologizing more than, I can't even think of who, but they apologize every week to somebody, and I assume the Saints got an apology. And this brings up a point, though, and we kind of touched on a little bit on in our weekly discussions during our sports lounge on the phone, but there's talk about, and Perry and I have talked about this the other night, actually, on our sports conference, there's talk about somehow getting pass interference involved with something that's reviewable. And that's a very slippery slope, because that's a judgment call. Now, the one thing I could say is if it's a timing issue, which is very rare, normally that's not the problem. The guy is hit, you know, when it's appropriate. This time it was not. This time the guy was hit before the ball was even there. So that's another story. But I don't know, Perry, what are your thoughts on this?
I think you're right. I think it's a very slippery slope. I wouldn't do it if I were the league. And I think what people don't realize is and obviously we all do because we were watching, but you know, Chris, if they run the ball, the Saints, if they run the ball three times, this is not an issue. There was no pass interference, and the game would have been over.
Mm-hmm.
And real quickly, just to interrupt, if all of a sudden you hear another voice coming, we may be having our guest panelists joining us either this week, maybe some. Hopefully, he's running a little late, or next week I'll unveil when he gets here. But
we will introduce him. We won't just let a voice come on.
We'll introduce him. Yeah,
you know,
if you hear another voice come out of nowhere.
Yeah, right. So, but anyway, getting back to this NFL stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's another thing. For example, they've already firmly established that, okay, if you're doing a replay for whether there's a catch or something, all right, you're looking specifically, that's what you're doing it for. You can't say, oh, by the way, here there's an offensive holding penalty over here, or there's a defensive penalty over here. You don't do that. So you really have to be careful. The same in the NBA. You know, a lot of things are happening. Let's say they're replaying a thing about the ball going out of bounds, and there might be a foul on that play. If it wasn't called, they're not going to call it at that point. So you really can't, because you can nitpick a replay apart, and you can change the whole nature of the play. So you kind of really need to not do that. I know the Saints will be pushing for something. I know how they feel. As I said last week, we were on the plus end of it with the Tuck rule in 2001-2002 season, and on the wrong end of it in 76 with the roughing the passer penalty. So I know exactly how Pierre and other Saints fans feel about it, but it's just, it's really too bad, because, you know, you play all year, and to have a call decide the game, the most important game. But we should talk a little about the end of that Patriots game, because we were, I forget exactly what was it, 14-7 or 17-7, I think the Patriots are ahead.
Yeah.
It was 17-7.
Yeah, then the Chiefs controlled the middle of the game. They got two touchdowns when they had 21-17. Brady came back, made it 24-21. Mahomes came back, made it 28-24. Brady came back, made it 31-28. Then there was a play where it was close to a touchdown by the Chiefs, but it was not ruled a touchdown. They kicked the tying field goal, and as was mentioned, Sean mentioned, we went into overtime. And once again, like the Super Bowl that I just saw on the replay from 2 years ago with Atlanta, the Patriots won the toss and marched it right down the field. Has there been any talk? I kind of heard something, and maybe you guys, you tend to listen to more, because I'm working full-time, you guys tend to listen to more sports radio than I do during the week. Has there been any talk, because what this has happened again, that either in the playoffs or just generally, that you should have the other team have a chance?
Yes.
I've heard a bunch of talk. Oh, yes.
And I think probably, Chris, that one, I don't know if they're going to review the pass interference and all that, but I do believe that rule is coming to where both teams.
I personally think at least there should be one full overtime. And then if they have to go sudden death, because I understand the regular season, I know, you know, maybe, okay, we want to have time constraints, but you should have the chance to at least see what you can do. Because you win the coin flip, you go down, you score, it's over. I'm sorry. That's just totally wrong. I mean, I don't like the total way the college does it, where they start on the 25-yard line and goes back and forth.
We should mention, Sean, if you score a touchdown, it's over.
Right.
If you score a touchdown, it's over. Yes, they did change that, but I don't – you know, either way, I don't care. It needs to be changed. It needs to be at least one. And then if they have to go to sudden death, oh, well, you've had at least one chance to get there. They need to have more opportunities because, I mean, it screws you if you do. You lost the coin flip, you never had the ball. What's the point on there? What's the point?
You know, the thing is, of course, they say, well, your defense needed – well, nobody defense – it could have just as easily – if the Chiefs had won the toss, because the defenses were gassed. I mean, the Brady and Mahomes were picking them apart. So – you know, I'm not saying that. I guess I can go with a chance maybe in during the regular season, not a whole 10-minute period or whatever they do, because those teams get tired. The field goal kickers can't even cook. When we've seen those ties, those teams are playing lackluster football through that. Yeah. That overtime gets so tame and nobody tries to take any chances.
One chance and then sudden death. That's all you need. One chance and then go to sudden death.
Right. Okay. I could go with that, and whether it's a touchdown or not. And then, of course, they're going to have to go for and then you're going to have the decision of, okay, let's say that you had that situation, the Patriots kick the extra point. Then the Chiefs would have to say, you know, we're really gassed. Maybe we better go for two right now and, you know, whatever. I mean, there'll be a lot more coaching decisions that would come out of such a thing. There was a big rally in Foxborough today sending off the Patriots, who landed in Atlanta, I guess, at 4 this afternoon. The Rams were supposed to be there at 7:40. And Eastern, and so off we go into Super Bowl, preparation. And really, the teams do more preparation in this week that we just went through than they do in the second week. You can't really concentrate in those practices.
No, they're distracted. All the stuff they got going on. By the way, if you're agreeing, disagreeing, you can call in. I forgot to do this earlier. 646-876-9923, and then hit 287. 723-4600, hits pound key twice. You're here. Star 6, mute you, unmute you. Star 9 raises your hand. Alt Y, raise your hand if you're on the computer. So,
but you know who I was thinking of when that Alex Smith story came down? And again, just to reiterate, because that was like the big news of the day, at least NFL Network had it, that they are planning, the Redskins, to go without Alex Smith this week. Remember, he had a very bad fracture of his leg. He also had an infection set in when he was in the hospital, so you know, that probably delayed his recovery to some degree. And they're, again, planning to not have him. If they do, it's a bonus. I think the natural fit there is Nick Foles, because
I've heard that they're looking at him. I have actually heard that they are thinking about this.
Yes, because that takes the weapon away from another division team. And, you know, you've got – who says Nick Foles isn't better than Alex Smith? You know, you're losing nothing. If Alex Smith comes back,
he's much better than Alex Smith.
Yeah, well, he has been so far, sure. So you get Alex Smith ready, by the end of this year or whatever, and then he's trade bait. So you can't lose. I would go for Nick Foles if I was, and that's the kind of place Nick Foles ought to go, where they're almost ready. They're a playoff. They're on the fringe of the playoff.
They're very close.
You know, you really don't want to go to Arizona got a rookie. But you know what I'm saying? You don't want to go to those kinds of teams. You'd much rather go to a team that's in the mix. And Washington was in the mix this year. So anybody got any more NFL stuff?
We do have a caller from the 312 that has raised their hand. So caller,
that's Bob. Let me Bob.
Hello. Good evening.
Hello.
I just wanted to mention, in case anyone everyone may know this already, but if you want to hear, if anyone wants to hear the winning team's radio network next Sunday, you hear the celebration, and remember, TuneIn leaves them on a lot longer than SiriusXM.
That is true. That is true, yes.
I am hoping, now I was lucky with the Chiefs and the Patriots, and I'm hoping for the Rams too, because the Rams covered the championship game on KSPN 710, and, you know, they were streaming. I don't know that the Patriots streamed. I don't think they did.
They did.
I didn't really check.
Yes, they did.
Oh, they did stream. Okay, good, for the Sports Hub, 98.5. So that's good. So what happened with me, I was able to listen live. Of course, I'll be listening live on 98.5. But because the internet's always a little behind, I was able to flip back and maybe hear the last play again if I wanted to with the Chiefs. And I'm hoping to be able to do that with the Rams announcers too, because you get a little perspective, especially if you're waiting for a replay and stuff and you want to hear what both sides think about it. I think that's great. So I'm hoping that both the Sports Hub and KSPN do stream, because, of course, it'll only be on the flagship stations. The local broadcasts are only on the flagship stations. They can have some of the pregame up to a certain point, but then they have to go to Westwood One if they're going to cover the game. So that,
and that's exactly Chris what happened here last week, because we have a Chiefs affiliate and they had the pregame show, and then they had to get the play-by-play from Westwood One. So that's
right,
that is exactly what happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, any
we've done our NFL stuff, so why,
yep.
Okay. Should we go to the basketball stuff?
Let's go to basketball, and I've got the NBA.
Yeah, let's get over to the NBA.
Yeah, the NBA, going into today, these were the standings. In the East, excuse me, Milwaukee has taken the lead. They've been threatening Toronto and been right on their tail. Well, they've kind of pulled ahead of them a little bit. They're now 35-12. Toronto is 36-15, so you can see that's only a game different. But Toronto has, it's a three game, in the old baseball parlance, it's three games in the loss column, because Toronto's played more games. Indiana's third, 32-16 now. Victor Oladipo was injured. And what was the exact injury that he suffered?
He has a ruptured quad, his left knee.
Oh, ruptured quad. And he'll be out the rest of the season. And I know some people think that means the Pacers won't even make the playoffs. I don't know about that. But
I've heard that he's going to be out at least the rest of this season and possibly even next season with that injury.
So they'll certainly drop some slots probably, because, you know, they've got some teams right behind them. So they're 32-16, currently running third in the East. Philadelphia is 32-18. The Celtics are 30-19. Played a really good game last night, a loss to the Golden State, but it was 115-111, the kind of game you expect when you put the Celtics and the Warriors on the court together. The Celtics always play them tough, so that was, didn't disappoint anybody nationally. It was the kind of game you'd expect to have on there with them. Yeah. Then we go to Brooklyn in sixth at 27-23, and they're pretty good. They're four games over 500. They're playing pretty well. Miami at 23-24 is number seven. Number eight is Charlotte, 23-25. Then we drop to the teams that are not in the playoffs, as if the season were to end today. Detroit at 21-27. Washington at 21-27. Orlando at 11th at 20-29. Then we drop off to the teams that are basically out of it. Atlanta 15-33. Then the real bad teams. We have Chicago at 11-38. The Knicks at 10-37. And Cleveland at 9-41. So in the East, if the playoffs were to end today, or the season would end today, we'd have Milwaukee, the number one seed, would be hosting Charlotte. We'd have Philadelphia, the four seed, hosting the Celtic. The number two seed, Toronto, would be hosting Miami. And the number three seed, Indiana, would be hosting Brooklyn. In the West, Golden State has retaken the lead. Remember, Denver was up there before, but Golden State's at 35-14. Denver now at 33-15, right on their tail. Oklahoma City, number three, at 30-18. Portland 31-20 at number four. Number five, Houston 28-20. San Antonio 28-22 in six. Utah also 28-22, but with tiebreakers or whatever, they're seven according to the standings we have. The Clippers are the last playoff team right now at 27-22. On the outside looking in, we have the Lakers at 25-24. This is all a big mishmash right behind. Everybody's right behind. There's nothing settled in the West, that's for sure. 25-24, Sacramento in 10th place at 25-24, also well tied for 9th, really. In 11th is Minnesota at 24-25. Dallas, 22-26 in 12th. New Orleans 22-28 in 13th. Memphis 20-30. They're starting to get kind of far away, 20-30. And the one team that is not happening is Phoenix at 11-40. And then for the Western matchups right now, you would have number one, Golden State meeting the Clippers. The four seed would be Portland meeting Houston. We would have Denver as the two seed meeting Utah. And we would have Oklahoma City as the three, meaning San Antonio as the seventh. So it would be
the LeBron-less playoffs if they were to start today.
It would.
Yes, it would. No LeBron. This would be the first time I think LeBron would be in the lottery, if I'm correct.
That's a good question. I have a feeling maybe the first couple of years with Cleveland. It took a while to get things together there, but it's been a long time anyway.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And the thing is, too, that you're going to – right now, and, of course, things are very fluid in the West, but right now you could have, coming down to the end, a Lakers-Clippers battle for that spot, and that'll get Los Angeles excited for the Lakers. May not get the Clipper fans, all 12 of them, too excited because they can't make much noise compared to the rest of the Laker fans. I think so. I think I heard that.
Yeah,
I think
okay.
The players. I think the players are fans, so that'd be 12 right there.
Okay, that'd be 12 right there. But, you know, and of course, as we all know, Houston dumped Carmelo Anthony basically for $900,000 to Chicago, and I heard Chicago's going to basically release him, and there's a rumor that he could end up being with the Lakers.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah, well, they're friends. You know, that whole group, Dwayne Wade, LeBron, and Carmelo go back to that 2003, around that era when they came of age, and so they've been friends right along. So, okay, we got some college basketball scores for you. And then, Sean, you can talk a little when we finish these about yesterday's SEC Big 12 action. And I've actually got the up-to-date without the late game today. But I've got the ACC standings that I just figured I'd read to people. I keep track of them for myself. I figure we got a little time. We can read the ACC standings. And you can talk about the SEC and Big 12. But let's do today's games first. We have Providence beating DePaul in Providence, 70-67. Georgetown went into Madison Square Garden and beat the Red Storm of St. John's. 89-78, pulled away late. Cincinnati went to Temple and knocked off the Owls, 72-68. We had UMass playing Rhode Island at home and beating them, 77-70. Purdue beat Michigan State, 73-63. Villanova clobbered Seton Hall. My goodness, Seton Hall's better than this. I don't know what happened, but it was 80-52. Villanova all over them. Houston beat Tulsa, 77-65. We have Illinois State over Indiana State in the Missouri Valley Battle, 76-62. Memphis over Central Florida, 77-57. Loyola of Chicago beat Southern Illinois, 75-50. Minnesota beat Iowa, and Perry can talk about that later if he wants to. We might not want to. 92-87. The late games, probably over by now. Florida State, because they start at 6 Eastern, Florida State and Miami, and the other game is Washington State and Oregon. And so, Sean, talk about that SEC Big 12 challenge yesterday.
Well, yesterday,
which, by the way, Sean, it has been extended now 6 years. So,
Okay. It has. I saw that earlier. Yeah, is it going on 6 more years?
And is it going to be in the middle of the season like it is here? Or
It always is. They always break it up. Usually, it's almost always the last Saturday in January.
It's a good thing. You know, with the Super Bowl and stuff, it's kind of a good breaking point in your schedule. It's about halfway through the conference schedule, pretty close to halfway. So, yeah, why not? You know?
Yeah, pretty close. So they went there. Of course, you had six. You had basically Tennessee beat the SEC teams that won. Tennessee over West Virginia, Kentucky over Kansas, Texas A&M over Kansas State, and, of course, Georgia over Texas. So they got 4 wins in this challenge. Oklahoma beat Vanderbilt, Oklahoma State over South Carolina, Baylor over Alabama, TCU over Florida, Texas Tech over Arkansas State. So it was Big 12 winning 6
Iowa State over Ole Miss.
Iowa State over Ole Miss, yeah. That was the one I'm missing. So 6-4, which the SEC winning, I mean, the last couple of years, the SEC hasn't won that many. I mean, yeah, Kentucky, Kansas. I mean, Kansas and Kentucky, that was the hype, the big game this year for this challenge. that was kind of, I mean, the teams, and I know we have a friend in Kentucky, Maryland, that's probably hating this, but both teams are down, Kansas and Kentucky. I want to tell you, Tennessee, West Virginia are both very good teams. And Tennessee's a team. I mean, Rick Barnes, he left Texas. It was probably time for him to leave because he had done what he could here, and then there was a whole lot of change. But, he's gone into Tennessee. He's put some emphasis in the men's program, which in Tennessee, the men were always behind the women, kind of like at Texas, kind of same thing. The women's program was always better. But I'm going to tell you, that was probably the game, I mean, as far as matchups that people want to look at. But Kansas, Kentucky, I don't know. And then just, Iowa State and Ole Miss, that one had the potential. And that was a good game. That was good. But Iowa State's the team you got to watch out for, just as Ole Miss. Ole Miss team, you got to watch for. But, and then some of these others were just, basically throwaway games. But
so Georgia and Texas had a Sugar Bowl rematch, huh?
Yes, they did. But nobody, no Bulldog was attacked by any Longhorn this kind of time. So
that's good. They're supposed to. Nobody Longhorns don't attack them. They heard them, don't they? I don't think
he kind of went out. He lunged at the Bulldog there at the Sugar Bowl. But they didn't have that happen. They didn't bring him to Athens yesterday. They left him at home. It was all but. Both those teams, Texas and Georgia, not very good. Shaka Smart, I hate to say it, he seems like a nice guy, but probably on his way out. He has no tournament victories. It was a heartbreaking one, of course, the one year that Perry and I and a bunch of us remember against Northern Iowa. But he's probably on his way out. But I mean, a lot of these games were just. I mean, I like these conference challenges that either the Big East ACC, the Big Ten ACC. Those are, the Big 12 SEC. They're kind of a fun little deal. I mean,
now they set them up before the season. Like, do they try to? Yeah, okay. Like next week, next year, they've got that. Let's say Kentucky's schedule has a blank. Kansas's schedule, they could meet again, right? If they think that's the right matchup,
they won't match them up 2 years in a row. They never did that. They try to match them up against different teams, and then they rotate. So because the SEC has 14, the Big 12 has 10, which I wish these. That's one thing I wish. One of my pet peeves. I wish they would have it with conferences have the same amount of teams that would match up because, like, you had two SEC. Conference games because they had 14, Big 12 had 10, but they rotate them so that four of the teams are setting out different years and they work it, and so it just
The ACC, it isn't so bad with the Big 10. There's 14 Big 10 and 15 ACC. There's only one team, and what the ACC does is pick the team that is preseason the bottom, and they just have them sit out. So, and that's going to rotate. You're not going to have the same teams out all the time, and whatever. So. Speaking of the ACC, I do have their standings going into today's Florida State-Miami game anyway. And it's kind of interesting because you have a real top-heavy kind of thing with a lot of teams with one loss. You'll see that this is very interesting. And we have Duke at 6-1, Louisville at 6-1, Virginia at 6-1, North Carolina at 5-1. And then you drop down to Syracuse at 5-2 and Virginia Tech 5-2. Then you go to the middle of the pack, NC State at 4-3, Georgia Tech at 3-4. Then BC is at 2-4. Florida State's at 2-4. Again, not pending the outcome of their game with Miami today. Pitt at 2-5. Then you start dropping down the one-win teams. Clemson at 1-5. Miami 1-5. Notre Dame 1-6. Wake Forest 1-6. So kind of a spread out thing. There's not a real middle echelon, only a couple, three teams in the middle there. And so it's and Duke and Virginia are probably the class of the league. And one of the things that I know Perry will start getting into after the Super Bowl is what the experts are saying about the bubble teams. We're going to start being in early February able to talk about.
And they will be doing their own little kind of the way they do with the rankings of football. They start doing that in February also with where they list the top 16 seeds. They start doing that early February. And and also, like I said, in the Big 12, Iowa State is in first place right now. I think it's kind of an Iowa State, Texas Tech, kind of a toss-up. And West Virginia's there. And then, of course, SEC, Tennessee. And Ole Miss is not far behind Tennessee.
No. Let's go to Jerry. He's got his hand up, and he's going to be tired if we don't.
Right. Okay.
We got to let him talk.
He's even older than me.
Well, I want to
he's
comment.
Older than me, so, yeah. Well,
yeah, there you go. Well, yeah. I feel bad for Pitt. You know, they again yesterday they were in it. They were up by four at the half, and then it all fell apart. You know, losing 66-51, and you know they don't have enough tall guys. I was told as to why you know they're having the problems that they are.
Well, what happens with teams like Pitt, BC, and some of these other teams? They may have one or two guys that are potential NBA players, but when they're playing Duke and they're playing Louisville and they're playing North Carolina, they got four or five of those kind of guys. So you're gonna see a BC or a Pitt win a game like that once in a while, but it's not that easy because they don't recruit the same from the same waters. You know, those people are not choosing between the people that are choosing between Duke and Louisville and Kentucky and UCLA and Kansas. They're not the folks that are being recruited by Pitt and BC.
Right.
So you've got two classes in college basketball, but it doesn't mean that you can't get a good coach that gets it together, gets lucky with a couple of recruits, improves the players, you know, by coaching, coaches them up. So you can't say that a team like a BC or a Pitt can't challenge once in a while, but they're not going to do it all the time. Syracuse, I'd put in that line because they're quite a recruiting team. UConn gets a bunch. The ones that have been perennial powers, Villanova, those kind of teams. So it's harder for the people in that conference, the Providences and the Seton Halls and stuff, to compete against somebody like Villanova, you know, because they're going to go and get more blue chippers. And it wears your depth down. They might have 10 really good players. You got about seven. And so eventually guys get tired and they start fouling because and the radio guys are like, oh, that was a bad call. Well, what's happening is guys are getting tired and they're fouling somebody because they can't stop them. They're grabbing them and stuff. So this is what happens.
Another problem, Chris, especially in the situation with Pitt, this coach had to come in and, frankly, he had to clean up where the cupboard was pretty bare. It was
right, because they didn't win a game last year.
Yeah, there really wasn't anything here.
That's hey, guys, right. Our main guest, one of your guest panelists, has come to join you, Sean.
Okay, our guest panelist is here. Main reason has arrived. Uh-oh.
I did make it being entertained. I hear the comments about the difference in degree of recruiting for these schools in college basketball. And you can always tell those teams that are perennially on top, they can be beaten in the NCAA tournament, but it's hard to beat them consistently within the season.
Mm-hmm. So main reason as we get to about the – we can bounce back the NBA a little bit because that's one of your fields of expertise. As we get to the halfway point or a little past the halfway point in the NBA, what has surprised you so far and who's disappointing, who's surprising, and, you know, what do you think's going on generally?
I think the surprise so far in the NBA is how – call it parity. I don't know what you want to call it, but how many teams there are competing for the opportunity – to go to a championship. Now, the Warriors are on a 10-game win streak, so they seem to be asserting themselves back into the original position where people assumed they'd be. But because they started out slowly relative to what you'd expect of them, it seems like there's a lot more competition in that Western Conference. Teams like OKC and Denver and Houston all seem to be potentially teams that could give the Warriors quite a series and seven games. No one would pick any of those teams over the Warriors, perhaps Houston, but it's still competitive. And then in the East, Milwaukee, which is a team that I thought would be one of the better teams there at the top of their conference. And they've been there all season, but that conference also going down to Toronto, Boston, Philadelphia, and Indiana, that conference is competitive. And these teams are playing so well and so much better, I think, than everyone thought when they thought it would only be like a two or three-team race in the entire league. And it seems to be more than that. It seems to be about a six-team race now.
Clearly, I
think you would agree that the Oladipo injury in some way is certainly going to hamper the Pacers.
Drastically. That's so unfortunate. Oladipo hit a stride last year, became one of the forces in this NBA. Usually don't see that. A player who's been in the league 5 or 6 years all of a sudden hits his stride and becomes a beast, actually. And then he got hurt, and it's season ending and was taken off the court on a stretcher and you would expect Indiana to fall back. They have a talented team, and they may not fall out of the playoff hunt, but contention and Eastern Conference Finals, I think that ship just sailed for them.
Yeah, you know, the thing with the Celtics, as a Celtics fan, my take, I'm curious what somebody from the outside would say, is it's consistency, and they're prepared for playing Toronto, and they prepare for playing, you know, Golden State. And I mentioned on our sports conference on Friday night that they would give the Warriors a good game last night, and they, you know, if not win it, and they certainly did. But, you know, it's playing, you know, these other teams, the also-rans, you know, and they just aren't consistent on the defensive end. And also Gordon Hayward seems to be a little tentative. Hopefully that'll, you know, he's just got to get more confidence and, you know, get back to what he can be. And Kyrie's kind of called them out a little bit. He's called the young guys out and said, you got to play your best every game or you're not going to win in this league. But he's done it a little publicly, and I don't know if that really goes over real well with the players.
Well, I think what happened with the Celtics is faction unfortunately developed. That was an unintentional consequence of the success they had last year with these young players. They took the Celtics to the Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and now this season comes and Kyrie and Gordon Hayward are supposed to assert themselves as being the leaders of that team. And these young guys, Terry Rozier, Jason Tatum, you know, these players, Jaylen Brown, well, you know, how are you not going to respect what we did? That's been the problem on that team. In addition to, as you say, Gordon Hayward trying to feel his way into the lineup, not wanting to be too assertive, but, you know, still trying to get his game back from the injury. I think those are the kinds of things that are going on with them. If they can get Gordon Hayward playing somewhere near what he did when he was an all-star, then I think they can get to the NBA Finals. I think he's the key to that team progressing, because I think if he plays the way they paid him to play, then everyone else will fall into place, including Kyrie and the youngsters. I think Hayward is the key for them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And remember, callers, if you guys have anything that you want to add, you all you have to do is raise your hand, and we will get to you.
Okay. We already gave our thoughts on the NFL, but main reason you're running a little late. Let's get you on. I mean, next week we'll all get into the Super Bowl itself. But you're a Rams fan.
Right.
Let's talk about last. Let's let him give his. We gave our thoughts. Let's let him. We're letting him catch up.
It is now 2-1, Chris. 2 Rams fans and then you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll survive. You know, yeah. By the way, I didn't mention one of the things that happened at the rally today. They're apparently their slogan. I'm assuming this is their slogan. Remember 2 years ago it was do your job? Apparently it's we're still here. In other words, remember how Zolak at the end of that game said America's worst nightmare, we're back, baby, kind of thing. And, you know, I think that's kind of what they're going to play on. We're still here and you're going to have to deal with us, you know. So we're big enough to deal with a mere 2-on-1 breakaway here. I can
handle it. And especially on the call last week, main reason, because you weren't here last. You know, you give your, like, especially the call. You know, as a Rams fan, on your side of the call and everything, maybe.
Well, as a Rams fan, of course, I'm a little more accepting of the fact of the no call than I would be otherwise. But as a sports fan, I understand that this was an egregious call, and this was a call that definitely should have been made. But what I don't like is the narrative that's gone forward after that. For instance, if that call had been made, the Saints were essentially guaranteed a win. I don't think there's anything that we've seen from Sean Payton in that game or in his career that tells us that Sean Payton was going to kneel 3 times, take that clock all the way down, and then kick a field goal, leaving the Rams with a minuscule amount of time. And in a scenario after the 2-minute warning, when Sean Payton could have ran the clock down and did just what people are predicting he would have done, he passed twice. He passed on first down, which people thought was inexplicable. Then he came and the third down play, which is the play that people were talking about, that was a pass as well. So 2 different times Sean Payton would have passed. And I'm not one who believes in the kneel down strategy. Sean Payton probably would have tried to go for a touchdown because that's what he does and that's who he is. And so then we'd have had the same scenario where the Rams would have had time to come down and perhaps tie that game via a touchdown. But that didn't happen. But even with the car being left on the field and the Saints kicking a field goal, that game was still available for them to win. They had multiple times. They had an opportunity to stop the Rams on defense. They were up by three. Then they got the ball in overtime to start. Ask the Kansas City Chiefs if they'd rather trade places with the Saints as far as having the ball to begin overtime. And I think you'd find that they would. And then after the interception, the Saints had another time, another opportunity to stop the Rams on defense. That's three different distinct opportunities to affect the game and take control and win that game.
And if you want to talk about calls, remember too, I don't know if you saw this main reason, but the NFL did say not only did they miss that call, there was a call on the drive before the one on the 2-minute warning where the Rams were driving. They missed a face mask, which would have put the Rams on the pretty much on the 1-yard line.
Which had that call been made, then Sean Payton and Drew Brees would have had to score a touchdown to take the lead rather than a field goal to take the lead. They would have been down by four. Had that touchdown hypothetically been scored if that call had been made. There are always calls that occur in sports which affect the outcome of the game. This one was late, but my philosophy has always been in any sport, and not simply because I'm a Rams fan, if a call or a play happens and it goes against you and it's egregious, that's fine. But if you have the ball late in that game with an opportunity to affect your own destiny, then that call is nullified and it goes to being just one of the things that could happen in the game in the past that could have gone either way.
Sometimes it's a game-ending night. We had one with the Patriots, the 76, a roughing the passer, and it was like with less than 2 minutes to go. The Raiders then were in field goal range. They kicked the field or whatever. No, they scored a touchdown, won the game 21-17. And it was one of those things where there was no time to come back. But you're right about the Saints. They did have some other opportunities after that call. I also wanted to get your thoughts. We were talking earlier about maybe changing the overtime rules so that each team gets a chance in the overtime. We've had this game with the Patriots and Chiefs, and we had the game with the Patriots and Falcons 2 years ago where you win the toss, you march down, you get the touchdown, and off you go. Do you think that's should it be in the regular season to have a chance, or just in the playoffs, or leave it the way it is?
Well, I think it should be all the time. But, I understand with network obligations and whatnot and the fear of what happens, I can understand not doing it in the regular season, but it must be in the playoffs where each team gets a chance to possess offensively. And people always say, well, defense is a part of the game, and, if your defense can't stop them, then you don't deserve the win. But this is the thing. I've been watching football for quite some time. I've never seen a coin toss won in overtime where the team winning the coin toss sends their defense on the field first.
That's correct.
I've never seen that happen.
Well, I'll tell you what, it happened by mistake. Abner Haynes did it in 1962 by mistake. And they ended up coming back and winning the game. But it wasn't a mistake.
None of the three of us are that old. I'm the old guy.
Well, Jerry's still older than me, so that's all right.
Yeah, Jerry, right. You and Bill, but main reason of Perry ain't that old.
By the way, though, Chris, you should probably give us these hockey standings. Because
I will.
We're getting there.
By the way,
main reason as a panelist, you're welcome to chime in. On all this stuff. Which hockey's are so.
Well, that's right. I don't expect to hear much from Sean either about hockey. All right, here we go. In the East, in hockey, we got, and these are the All-Star break standings. The season resumes again tomorrow. We have Tampa Bay with 76 points. And remember, it's 2 points for a win and 1 point for a tie or an overtime loss. So Tampa Bay, 76. Toronto's in second in the Atlantic at 62. Montreal in third at 61. The Bruins at 59 in fourth place. Buffalo in fifth at 54, Florida 48, Detroit 45, and Ottawa brings up the rear at 43. In the Metropolitan Division, we have the Islanders at 63, Washington 60, Columbus 59, Pittsburgh 58. Then we go to Carolina at 54. Then we drop down to the Rangers at 49, Philadelphia 44, and New Jersey at 43. And then we look at our Eastern matchups down here. Right now, what happens is your top two teams will play the two wild cards. So what you have is the top three in each division make it, and two wild card teams. So the first place teams play the wild card teams, and then two and three meet in the division. So right now it'd be Tampa Bay against Pittsburgh in that division in the Atlantic, Toronto and Montreal, and then you would find in the other divisions the Islanders would play the Bruins. And by the way, people are having buys right now. The Bruins didn't play for about 5 days before the All-Star break, so the Bruins just didn't play for a couple of games. So they kind of got behind Montreal, who was not, you know, it's all going to even out, of course, as it always does. But you'll notice some weird things changing in the standings the next few weeks as we have the buys and people are idle. So we have the Islanders would play the Bruins, and then Washington would be hosting Columbus. In the Central Division, we have Winnipeg at 64. Nashville also at 64, but the way the standings listed, it's Winnipeg as the tiebreaker, apparently. Minnesota 55, Dallas 52, Colorado 52, St. Louis 49, and Chicago 45. In the Pacific, Calgary 71, San Jose 65, the Vegas Golden Knights are at 62, we have Vancouver at 52, Anaheim at 51, Arizona at 50, and Edmonton, who fired their general manager, Peter Chiarelli, who used to be the Bruins general manager. He went up to Edmonton. He was there for about 3 years. They let him go this week. They're at 49, and the Kings are at 44. The Western matchup in the Pacific Division, you'd have Calgary hosting Dallas or Vancouver, because they are tied for that last playoff spot. And San Jose, as the two seed, would meet the Vegas Golden Knights. In the other division, in the Central, Winnipeg would again host Dallas or Vancouver. So I don't know who would have the tiebreaker between those two, but those would be your wild card teams, would be Dallas and Vancouver. And Winnipeg would host the other one, and then Nashville and Minnesota would play. So we had the All-Star festivities. They had the skills competition Friday night. Then the divisions played an All-Star game last night in San Jose. The Central division beat the Pacific Division 10-4. See, the West went first because they were the home team, so made the Eastern winner have to play two games right in a row, and the Western winner got the time off. So I can see why they did this. So Central played Pacific and won 10-4. Again, no defense is played in these All-Star games, like the NBA All-Star games, no defense. Metropolitan in the East beat Atlantic 7-4, and then to win the whole thing, Metropolitan beat the Central 10-5. So there you go, and
bring your hockey questions next week. Since we're on Saturday, we're having our all-star panel for the Super Bowl. I mean, all of us, Main Reason, Ringside Robert with your hockey. So bring it all next week, man. Next Saturday at 8 Eastern, by the way.
That's right.
Keep reminding you. Yeah,
that's right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so that, you know, things are rolling along in hockey and basketball, and you know, we're a little past the halfway mark, and we've still got time. Oh, baseball. I know. That's what we
do. Hall of Fame. What about the Hall of Fame? Let's talk about this one especially. Hall of Famers.
And good class this year.
Yes, we do have four Hall of Famers, those being Mariano Rivera, who is the first Hall of Famer to ever get 100% of the votes. Roy Halladay, Edgar Martinez, and Mike Mussina are the other three. And for those who keep track of, you know, which team, which player is going to go in under which team, obviously Mariano will go in as a Yankee, and Edgar is a Mariner, but Mussina and Halladay will go in as neutral, because I know Halliday's wife said that he loved both the Blue Jays and the Phillies, and Mussina said that he felt he had just as much success with the Yankees and the Orioles, so he is going in neutral.
Now, I know a lot of this as far as we were questioning. I questioned it. I mean, Main Reason, others, I think you were questioning it in some places this week. And Chris, you explained maybe a little bit of this, but the fact of Mariano Rivera being the first one to ever go in with 100%. Like, I'm thinking, who was the idiot? I mean, that voted against Hank Aaron, Joe DiMaggio, Lou Gehrig, Ted Williams, you know,
Babe
all
Ruth.
These guys.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth. I mean, who were the idiots that voted against these? And I think, Chris, you had a good explanation on this.
Well, it got to be a tradition. Part of it, though, there are certain players that they were – part of baseball's thing, for example, is morals clause, which is part of what's keeping Pete Rose out. It isn't just the violation of the rules. It does say a person –
part of what's keeping Roger Clemens out.
Well, they're doing that. Well, that's the whole other – that's the steroids and that's going on. But,
well, and
you know,
some of that. That's another – yeah.
Right, but we can talk about that during the after the Super Bowl, of course. But did we used to have discussions about that when John was around. We'd go back and forth about that all the time. But anyway, getting back to this, it became a tradition. The Hall of Fame was established in 1939, and a whole bunch of people went in together. You know, Walter Johnson, Babe Ruth, Ty Cobb, whole bunch of folks. And I've heard the recording, you may have, Perry, of the speeches that they all gave when they came in that day. And it's very interesting to hear those voices. Connie Mack, you know, all kinds of people. And nobody got in unanimously, or that was just maybe an acclamation thing where they just knew who the best ones were. But then after that, you've got Ted Williams. He wasn't going to get all the votes from the media because he had fights with the media. Babe Ruth had issues with, you know, yeah, he was a big hero to the kids, but everybody knew he had a drinking problem and a womanizing problem and this and that. Then it became almost a tradition where they just said, well, we didn't vote in Babe Ruth unanimously. We're not voting in anybody. The old guys got it in there, you know, took the bit in their teeth and said, we're never going to vote anybody in unanimously. Now, what the way it works is, if I remember right, and Perry, correct me if I'm wrong, that to get in, you have to have 75% of the be
that
mentioned on 75% of the ballots. And you don't have to mention, you can mention one name if you want to, or you can mention up to 10 of the people that are on the list. So, you know, so it meant that somebody left Ted Williams or Babe, or, you know, or Joe DiMaggio. I think, again, the first one may have been elected differently. I don't know, because they all came in en masse in 1939. Yeah. That may have been a different story, and I wasn't around, so I don't know about that, as old as I was, and I am. But the point is that you get to the Joe DiMaggio's, the Ted Williams, the Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, you know, Roberto Clemente wasn't even, you know, after all he did and the circumstances under which he died, you know, didn't even get in. But Mariano Rivera has a unique situation because he is the best ever. There is no doubt at what he did. You know, you can argue, you can say Ted Williams was the best hitter. Babe Ruth, because he pitched and hit and played the outfield, was the best all-around player. Or Willie Mays had the more tools than anybody else. Or you can have all kinds of conversations about that. There is no doubt, as good as Lee Smith was, as good as a lot of these guys, Bruce Sutter and, you know, Raleigh Fingers and all these guys, there is no doubt that Mariano Rivera, for the longevity, 19 years, and, you know, just being almost perfect. He was almost perfect every year,
right.
Almost perfect. So if anybody was going to ever get in unanimously, and apparently he was quite a man in the community and did a lot for a lot of people. And really, I'll tell you what, he had a sense of humor, too. I got to tell this quick story about him. And in 2005, the Yankees were there when the Red Sox got their World Series ring. And they introduced, of course, the Yankees because it was opening day, and they introduced all the players like they do. And Mariano Rivera got a standing ovation, and he got it. And the reason he got a standing ovation, because the Red Sox, they started their rally from 3-0 down against the Yankees with Mariano Rivera on the mound with the steal by Dave Roberts, and eventually scoring on a sacrifice fly, gave up that run. And, you know, it was a walk to Millar, and then Roberts scored that run. And so he realized that, you know, they were cheering because he had been on the mound. He totally got it. He waved to him, and he always appreciated that. And ever since then, he was endeared to the Red Sox fans. So he really understood the game. He understood the Red Sox-Yankee rivalry. And, of course, the Red Sox didn't, you know, he got them, but they got him sometimes. They played him so much. They faced him so often that they did have some success.
Chris, before Sean does does the wrap-up here, a couple things in baseball. We always look at who's on the rise. Clemens and Bonds were up to 59%, but it sounds like they may have peaked because a lot of the writers who won't vote for them told Jeff Passan after this vote that there's enough of them that will never be swayed, that they likely won't get in. Kurt Schilling is up to 60%. Apparently he is rising, so we'll see what happens there. And we did have a couple of signings. Hunter Strickland, formerly of the Giants, now signed with the Mariners. And also the Mets fans will be happy to know that you have Justin Wilson in your bullpen. 2 years, $10 million. So I'm sure they'll be happy about that.
And any quick thoughts from you, Main Reason, on the Hall of Fame?
No. I understand the tradition of it, but when I see that Mariano Rivera was unanimous, it's more an indictment on the writers and their pompousness and their moral code that they want to follow, you know, with no one knowing anything about their lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Because Mariano Rivera, without question, is the best closer ever. But there are people who say that Ozzie Smith is the best defensive shortstop ever, and he wasn't unanimous, and so on and so forth. So you know, that I'm glad Mariano got I'm glad he got in, and I'm glad he was unanimous. He should not have been the first.
Well, now the barrier has been broken, and now it'll happen again. You know, it won't happen very often, and it shouldn't happen very often. You know, it should.
Edgar Martinez is the first DH to.
That's right,
yes,
too.
And they think that that might help the DH crop coming in the future with Edgar getting in as a DH. So we got our baseball in this week. We've been threatening now for a couple of weeks. And
okay, well, I think it's time. I think it's time for Sean's 2 minute warning here.
We are at the 2 minute warning, Sean.
All right. First of all, I want to remind you all that we will be back once again Saturday, February 2nd, the same time that you're listening. If you're listening to this live, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, that's 7 Central, 6 Mountain. But it'll be a different day Saturday, Groundhog Day, and we're going to have the big super panel, myself, Chris Perry. We might even have Main Reason if he makes it back. Ringside Robert is saying he will be here. We will find out. So we're going to have this big Super Bowl panel going discussing next week. Also, if you want to leave us any comments, questions, criticisms, whatever, 773-572-7715. Do not mark the message private. That way we can hear it. Also, if you know of anybody that wants to listen to it, if you want to listen to it again, you can either go to legendoldies.com, download the podcast, or if you have a VictorStream or smartphone or computer, just type in worldwide, all one word, space, legend, and then you can select Sports Lounge Live. That's this week and any other. You can hear it over there. Also at the conversation station, 712-432-6499. Hit 4 from the main menu, hit 2, and it is podcast number 2. But like I said, remember, Saturday, February 2nd, special edition so that we can all drink and watch the Super Bowl.